This is tape number 7, side 1. Professor of Theater and Drama, Robert Skloot, February 24th, 2006. You were speaking about Donna Shalala.
We inquired if Donna would be interested in acting in this play, Into the Woods, playing the grandma's part, of which there are, I think, about 2 lines only.
Oh.
And a song or two that she's in the chorus for. And so Donna agreed. We double casted because she couldn't be in all the productions, all the performances. But the performances that we identified as her being in sold out instantly. Everybody wanted to get to see them.
Really?
And she never learned her lines, those 2 or 3 lines that she had, or the songs. We positioned somebody next to her at all times when she was on stage to move her where she needed to move. She was hardly at rehearsal because she was being a chancellor. So, but it was great fun. And one last story about this. When it was over, the director and I decided to give her a gift. And so I decided, why don't we give her a transcript, a UW transcript for her work in Into the Woods. And identify courses such as learning lines, F, you know, flunk, you know, and things like that. Nose blocking, D+. And the funny thing is that I don't know if you know, but to get a piece of transcript paper is like breaking into Fort Knox.
No.
Because to get any official transcript means it can be forged, and therefore somebody with it can take it out. And so they are held closer than the jewels in the Hofburg in Vienna. I mean, so we finally prevailed upon the registrar at the time, who allowed us to have 1 slice of paper, of transcript paper, so we could give Donna her transcript. It was a great fun to do. Lastly, I would say too that this, and coming back to this administration, my perspective on the UW in the 70s, which managed its affairs in ways I wasn't happy with politically. It was a crisis time. I think I'd talk about how Vilas Hall almost didn't get built because
yes.
of the university was going through terrible times here, and the relationship between the legislature and the university was as bad as one can imagine. But then here we are in 2006, and it's probably just as bad or worse. I had an experience on the faculty that I learned from. I was put on a committee that had to do with the use of space for certain outside activities. This came because of issues of the ROTC and recruiting on campus, and whether or not the university rules, such as they were, should be adjusted or rewritten in order to because some wanted to exclude the ROTC uh-huh. from recruiting or the Army recruiters to come on campus. So I was on a committee, and I was just so appalled, and of course I was hamstrung because there were 7 or 8 or 9 on the committee, and 7 of them were totally right-wing people, including the person who I came to see as the leader of this retrograde movement, and that was Gordon Baldwin in the law school,
uh-huh.
who was a fine lawyer, I'm sure, but knew how to tie things up. I came into this committee so naive. I came to see. My only ally on the committee was someone named Mark Borns, who was the student appointed to the committee, who was in the law school. Mark is now a lawyer in town and does good work as a liberal left lawyer. But we at the end of this, we put out a minority report because we did not want to sign on to the whatever that report was saying. And I remember so clearly how Gordon, who was not the chair but someone on the committee, was able to tie the committee up. I learned from them that if you can set the agenda of a meeting, you can do whatever you want in the meeting to get what you want. It won't make a difference. If you can put the agenda in a way that works for you, and he could, then it doesn't matter what you say or when you say it or what you want to do, because in the skilled hands of a lawyer administrator in this case, you can be demolished. And pretty much all we had at the end was just this report, this minority report. So this kind of reaffirmed this difficulty that I saw, because Baldwin was really inside the UW administration. He was a player, if you will, and at the highest level,
mm-hmm.
and who had entree and was, in fact, part of that administration, which I considered too far to the right.
Mm-hmm.
He remained that for many, many years. There was a group of people in the Senate in those years. David Fellman from the Political Science Department was one of them. Cronin, I think, was one of them too. And they all kind of got together, and they were strong. They were the adults, if you will, and we were the crazy youngsters.
Uh-huh.
And they took I always thought a paternalistic view of anybody who wasn't doing well for the university as they saw it needing to be done, could be slapped down for it, and somehow excluded or marginalized.
Uh-huh.
And one of the ways they did that in the 70s was to fire people that they, or non-retained people, who they who they didn't think that was good for the university. So those were tough years, those early years, on a whole bunch of levels, and I've spoken already about those real early years and my anxieties and difficulties in being at the university because of it. Now we are at...
Well, just give me your summary opinion of what Donna did for the university as chancellor.
As much as anything, well, in a very personal way, she was the one who really defined and ordered, the, through her administrative abilities, the formulation of a Jewish studies program. So in a very small way, I'm a beneficiary of that. But in a larger sense, I always thought Donna was someone who came to defy the Wisconsin image. Wisconsin's image as Midwestern people tend to be seen as quieter, more reticent, less seeking of the limelight. Donna was completely the opposite. She was an Easterner, in your face all the time, on stage 23 hours a day, and always contending with people, and always smart about it. She was one of the smartest, shrewdest politicians that I remember here associated with the university. As a result, was able to do things. It was almost as if she came from the outside in order to shape us up, and she did. My wife's joke, she's from St. Paul, Minnesota, and we joke that the worst thing, insult you can say about someone from the Midwest is that they're rude.
Oh, right.
Rudeness is the cardinal sin of a Midwesterner,
yes.
For a Midwesterner. But Donna was this kind of rude person. And because she was, I mean this really sincerely, because she was short, she was hardly 5 feet tall, and because she had lots of networking in the coastal areas, particularly in Washington where and in New York, where she was president of Hunter College, she came with a huge amount of positive baggage, if you will. I think those early years, people were just dizzy by her. It's like this whirlwind suddenly comes in and upsets the regularity of things as they are. She chose David Ward to be her provost, and then he became chancellor after she left. I think it was a wise appointment. The two worked terrifically together, and I think in those shillelagh years, the university on the whole benefited enormously from her presence.
Shillelagh was not an academic, though, was she? Really?
No, yes, she was. Yeah, but she was also a very astute politician in a public sphere. And academics can be insulated in their own community, but she was always out there and doing those things, contacts with politicians especially. So it would be very hard for her to fit any kind of Wisconsin mold. But she was totally, she wore red all the time, as you know, red
uh-huh.
sweaters, red scarves, red dresses. I think she had a big dog named Bucky.
Yeah.
She had a red Jeep that she, I think, she used to drive around, and she was quintessentially Wisconsin while she was here. And then she went elsewhere. She became a member of the cabinet, Clinton's cabinet, and did work there. So she was an academic. She had a PhD in political science, I believe, and had some administrative high posts prior to her coming here.
Do you think she was generally respected intellectually by the faculty?
I think the faculty appreciated her in her public visibility. I don't think the faculty has much of a care about the academic credentials of a chancellor.
Oh.
Of the provost, they do. The provost is the chief academic officer, whereas the chancellor is the chief operating officer.
Uh-huh.
And I think most people recognize, who know this bifurcated structure, that the chancellor has to spend a lot of time raising money out and glad-handing legislators, you know, and so forth, for which an academic degree is not necessarily needed or useful. I think the issue comes on the provost level to make sure that the provost has solid academic credentials, and they have. As John Wiley, who is a professor, came through here and a professor of engineering, computer and electrical engineering, and very well thought of scientist before he became, and dean of the graduate school before he became provost, and now chancellor.
What about David Ward as chancellor?
Well, I thought David did good work, too. I didn't have a lot of contact with him. As I say, the chancellor is someone that faculty don't have a lot of time to spend with because his activities are largely focused outside the university, though he has to keep an eye on inside, and that's why the provost and he have to work together well. I think he did with Shalala, and I think Wiley did very well with him, so it was a good team. I thought David was an able administrator and a very smart man. I think, in some ways, I think he was underappreciated. But I think he did wonderful work, and I also saw him lose his temper once in a while when he thought things had to get done and weren't getting done, and felt that we were going wrong. So I can't remember why, but I remember him. Just angry at people and seeing the anger. And that's, you don't see that often in a public figure. But I liked David a lot, and we had became sort of friends in a way that colleagues can be. And I thought his contribution to the university was good, in part because he kept the policies of Shalala, but then went beyond them to not only institutionalize things like, especially when the vision statement was done, in the early 90s, we put out this vision statement, 92, I think, which did not do well by the arts, mind you. I thought that was a problem. But in general, the things that he set out to do to deepen and extend research, and especially on undergraduate education, I think were excellent. He also did other things. And I think in general, he had a good relationship with the legislature. And so that was pretty good, too. When it gets mean and nasty, as it is today, we can really get gummed up here. Mm-hmm. So that's not a lot about administration, but
any observations on John Wiley, who is still chancellor?
Yeah, well, I've said, I think earlier in the tape, John was kind of my boss, if you can call it that. When I was in Bascom, I learned an awful lot from him. He's one of the smartest men I have ever seen, at all. I mean, he's wise in a way, and he's skilled in his political strategies. Now, he in his more recent times, his last year or two, he's come in for some difficult times. I regret them because he's enormously able. And in fact, he's promulgated, for instance, this vision of a whole new eastern side of this campus to destroy dormitories and buildings and build up a whole. Now it probably won't happen in my lifetime, but it's going to start next summer, with the building right outside this window being torn down. And it's a vast, vast, visionary kind of work that John is very capable of handling. Mm-hmm. I think he's respected enormously by the faculty. He knows many of them personally. And as I say, I think he's enormously able. And although he has had a rocky time of it for issues that have come up, which I won't get into, nonetheless, I feel the university is in first-class hands because of his chancellorship.
Bob, before we leave administration, let me ask you about your assessment of the nature of the relationship these days between the state legislature and Bascom Hall.
Well, this is a sad circumstance. I used to joke, I still do in some ways, try and make a joke. I said, what is it about the legislature that makes them so hostile to the university? Because most of them have their degrees from the University of Wisconsin. They're all graduates of our university system. Did they have such an unhappy time when they were here that they're out to take some kind of revenge against the university? I think Donna, by the way, told me once that she had an easier time working with Republicans than Democrats. Because she felt that the Democrats were, at that time in the legislature, were too interested in micromanaging, whereas the Republicans didn't. This was her impression that she shared with me one day. But I think times have changed, very much so. And like the politics of the United States, the country has moved in the last decade extraordinarily and importantly to the right,
mm-hmm.
and with the power of the vested in interest groups that have seen a resurgence or a dominance now, the university is just not, it's an easy target for anybody to beat up on, if you want to beat up on it. Ward began the statement that he when he was in office, at least towards the end, anyway, maybe all the time, he never called the university a state-supported institution. He used to call it a state-assisted institution, because he didn't want to give the impression that the state was supporting the university certainly well enough.
Mm-hmm.
And in those years that he was chancellor, I think it was 6 or 7 years, I mean, the contribution or the percentage of a support from the state declined further, so that now if you read the figures, you'll see that the state supports the university system for something like 21 or 22% of its budget.
Mm-hmm.
That's why there was talk last year, some goofy idea about privatizing the university, because if the state gives us so little, then what do we have to kowtow to the state for? It's hardly giving us enough to survive.
Mm-hmm.
If it weren't for fundraising and federal contracts, we would really be in terrible trouble. So I thought then that Ward did a good work and Wiley did work, but it became harder and harder and harder as the legislature became more and more right-wing. I mean, that now this issue that we shouldn't be giving contraceptives, laws, to students, to women students, they shouldn't have contraceptives mm-hmm. through administered through the Student Health Service, is just to me absolutely infuriating and retrograde in the extreme. I mean, the legislature has no business in this issue.
Mm-hmm.
They shouldn't be, and yet it now becomes an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to expend energies not on finding funds to teach classes and hire professors and to renovate and maintain buildings, but to take energies to fight whether or not women students should have access to contraceptives through the Student Health Service. I mean, it's bizarre, and it's detrimental, and it's deeply, deeply damaging to a great university. And if the trend continues longer, I think it'll be worse for us. We are now in serious situations. How to fund teaching assistants now is at the crisis point in the university.
Oh, is it?
Issues of over the years that we haven't paid the full tuition reimbursement for out-of-state students is now ballooned into such of a deficit that there's committees now trying to figure out how to manage this deficit. And we are not competitive any longer with TA stipends. We're not competitive any longer with faculty pay. And while in the last year or two, when other states seem to have been reinvesting in education as their economies got better somewhat, it's not the case for Wisconsin. And I think the lament about our condition is one that we will continue for some years in the future, and it's deeply, deeply distressing to everybody in the university community of all political stripes. You could be someone on the right of the political spectrum and still be appalled by the meagerness and stinginess and the outrageous behavior of the legislature towards the university, the flagship university in Madison.
Bob, you've been here a long time. By here, I mean Wisconsin. Do you see that that downward momentum stopping and reversed, or is it contingent on the nation?
Well, I don't have any ability really to predict, but in the near term, I don't think it's going to get much better.
Uh-huh.
There's going to be an election coming up and for governor. If the governor turns out to be a Republican nominee rather than the current incumbent Democrat, there are many people in the university that, like myself, and colleagues that I have, who are frantic with the worry that we have about how this is going to be continued. The issues are not that there are some people goofing off in the classroom.
Right.
It's not the issue of a great, as I mentioned earlier in this interview, with such a huge pool of people, thousands of people, somebody's going to screw up badly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's inevitable. But the bad publicity and the savagery with which the legislature comes down on the university for some things that are mistakes, admittedly so, but for other things which just have happened because they always happen everywhere in any large institution, What's important is how to make it better and try and prevent it from happening again. I'm not optimistic about the future.
Bob, before we conclude this quite extraordinary interview, I have to ask about the bananas that are all over your office in various configurations, various facial expressions, various sizes, placed everywhere. Would you comment?
So you noticed that, did you? Yeah, all right. Now, this is for posterity, so I have to be serious. If you turn around and you see up on one of the bookshelves, there's a photograph from a production that I did in 1971. It was a production of Molière's Tartuffe.
Oh.
And for the tape, I'll explain to you that Tartuffe, the protagonist character, is holding out a banana to the woman character named Elmire. This happened in a production of mine where Tartuffe, who is lauded by many as being a great religious, pious man, is really evil, and he's trying to get into bed with his host's wife,
right.
Young wife. So we did this production in the Student Union and in Memorial Union in the big stage, had virtually no props except a table under which her husband hides in a somewhat later scene, and a fruit bowl. And as Tartuffe is making overtures to be more friendly and offer himself and his services to Elmire, the woman, what she does to tempt him first, because she wants her husband, who's under the table, to hear that Tartuffe is not who he thinks he is, she offers to him an apple in this biblical image of temptation, and Tartuffe takes the apple and bites into it, and the juices just run down his face, and he's just inflamed with passion. And then in the interpretation is, he has this idea, is she really tempting me? Is this genuine? So he takes this banana out of the fruit bowl and slowly peels the banana, offering it to her. The symbolism of this gesture was not lost on the audience ever, any night, in any performance, and frankly, it brought the house down every time he did it. The slow peel, so I came to realize that the banana is a very funny fruit, among other things, maybe the funniest of fruits. And so, to make the long story short, since 1971, with one exception, I've put a banana in every play I've directed, to be there. It's not used necessarily, but there's somewhere in every production a banana. And I'm told that there are Skloot groupies in Madison who come to my productions just to see where the banana will be. So to frustrate them, I put it in the second act if I have to, because it'll make them stay the full duration of the performance. But it's been great fun. And in fact, this is kind of a joke now in the whole department, and people, when they know I'm directing, which I don't much anymore, but when I know I'm directing, they ask, well, where are you going to put the banana this time? The big challenge. So Banana Bob is kind of a nickname that's followed me a little bit since I've started this silliness, and the office, I guess, shows the results.
And clearly you are a professor of theater and drama. This concludes the interview. Thank you, Bob. Quite extraordinary career and person.
Well, thank you to me, Bob, and the career isn't over just yet, so we'll see how much longer we can do these silly things.
Okay. Bye. Thank you. The end.